Oh, wait, I gotta find my script. Hold on. So I'm calling the meeting, this LARIC regular meeting, to order. It is 1:40 on September 21st, 2018. Let's see, who's going to be the person? Hey, Sergio, would you be willing to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance today? So Sergio, what's your last name? Sergio Hernandez will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Sergio. Should I hold this? Is it on?
Yes.
You can hear me. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? It's weird, huh? Sometimes you can. I can hear it down here. Thanks, Sergio. I'm sorry, I just had a brain fart with your name. I totally know who you are. So there, so the agenda, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the August 17th, 2018 meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Discussion?
A second.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Second.
So I do have a question about the minute notes. There were a couple of things that, one of the things we did at the last meeting, for clarity's sake, for the project manager and the advisors was to identify protocols and kind of statements to say, so that when we're talking about directing staff, trying not to capture everything, but being clear what things that we want you guys to work on. So I'm looking at the minutes, and I think what I need to do.
John.
Hi, John. So I think one of the things that I noticed that wasn't on the minutes was the language that I used as we practiced the directing piece. And I think, Lancey, when you and I met after to do this, I sent you the email of the exact words that I used. So I think what I'll do also, John, so that you capture that exactly the way it is, because I don't think it was captured on the minutes, but I know I said it a certain way because I actually wrote it. So I just want to make sure that when we're directing, that you're capturing it here and also capturing it in the minute.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So I'll do, hey, this is a, make sure, sorry. Make sure we get that in. Thank you. You have a question?
The question is, do you want the minutes amended or revised?
No.
Amelia and I would have to accept your friendly amendment to add that language to the minutes. I trust you would.
Yes,
and I will as well.
Do you want it recorded? Do you want it to be reflected?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, right.
I so appreciate all the help with the process. So we're voting on approving the minutes as amended.
That's correct.
Now, and I will send. Go ahead.
Can I also add? Are we also dealing now with these action items that follow them, or is that an extra item?
In the minutes you're talking about?
Yes. If you right after the minutes.
Recording the votes that already happened. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Not a big issue, but my last name is misspelled. just for the record.
Urista. Got it. Okay.
And these action items are just a reflection of what occurred during the meeting and are reflecting the minutes as well, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
So as amended with the language, the statement I have, and with Emilio's spelling.
Correct.
Now do we approve the minutes with...
All in favor, seem to be saying.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. So, welcome, Alice.
Oh, thank you.
Can you pronounce your last name for me?
Hawkes.
Hawkes.
Yes.
Got it. So, Alice Hawkes, do we want to introduce her?
Yes.
Right? Alice Hawkes is from our new representative in the executive board from Montebello Unified. You want to just tell us a quick thing about you?
Sure. Hello, my name is Alice Hawkes. I'm from Montebello Community Adult Schools. I've been with the Montebello Unified School District for over 25 years. I was a principal at a middle school as well as just a principal at a high school. I started off with CTE courses way back 25 years ago, and I worked with adults with disabilities, and that's where the passion is. I've been with Adult Ed for a year and two months, and we've come a long way. So I'm very happy to be part of the board.
Thank you. We look forward to having you. And you have a new point person also?
Yes, I'd like to introduce Mr. Philip Tenorio. He is the also an administrator on special assignment. And Mr. Tenorio, would you like to say a few words?
Oh, yes. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, I've been with the district. This is my 21st year. I'm coming from K-12, primarily K-12 education section of our district. I worked with the adults with disabilities in the special education department as a program specialist at district office for 3 years, working at piloting some work experience programs for our adult transition program, and I'm looking forward to a new challenge in adult education.
Welcome. Welcome. Thank you. Sorry. It just flipped by me. Apparently we have no... We do.
We have one now.
We have one now. Okay. Got it. We have one speaker card. We'll hear from speaker number one.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Michelle Cohen. I'm representing United Teachers Los Angeles Adult Education Committee. I'm also a teacher advisor on the Adult Secondary Ed Work Group. And my comment is that I feel like we were making some really good progress. The last year and the year before when we got started with our ASC LARIC work group. And we're disappointed that we've had so few meetings lately, and we really are excited to get back to work, and I hope that those meetings will resume soon. It's one of the few areas that we teachers have had a chance to participate in this whole LARIC process, and so we hope to get back to it. That's all.
Thank you. So the next set of items where you see program updates, just to let you know what that's about, these are regular items that we will always keep on the agenda to keep our public informed about what's happening in LARIC within the member agencies and across all districts. So it's information items. Sometimes there'll be nothing to report on a specific item, but you might still see the topic there. So I just wanted to clarify that. The first thing we have today is under innovation and best practices, and I'd like to call up Irma Cuevas from East Los Angeles Skill Center to present on the Family Success Initiative.
Hello, everyone. My name is Irma Cuevas, and I'm currently an FSI Family Success Initiative teacher at Annandale Elementary School, which is located in Highland Park, and also Farmdale Elementary School, which is located in Altarena. our vision in the program is empowering emerging bilingual families to support student success and strengthen school communities. Alera Connection with Adult Education Program AEP, the program area for programs designed to develop knowledge and skills to assist elementary and secondary school children to succeed academically in school. And here's our background. Part of our background is to increase parent engagement. So the Division of Career and Adult Education is collaborating with different community services to pilot the Family Success Initiative. And it's an innovative approach to providing English as a second language classes to parents of LAUSD students. So we blend the ESL curriculum with LCIVIS tech, with district-specific parent education modules, and FSI reflects LAUSD's commitment to working together with families to support the success of all students. And here you see a picture with one of our parents, reading to one of their children. Program highlights for 2017-2018. At that point, we had 13 FSI sites. 339 students were enrolled in this program. They provided us with 15 hours of professional development each month. We had 451 LCIVIS tests, and we had a 90% of LCIVIS civics passing rate. So it was really a phenomenal thing to see that. So how are our Family Success Initiative students learning? With the WIOA, we have the LCIVIS test, we have digital literacy, we have transitions, soft skills, and successful learners. And here you see, we had a field trip to Arroyo Seco Regional Library, which last year the district collaborated with the public LA County Libraries. Our parents, unfortunately, some of them have never been to a public library, so it was really an eye-opener for them to even ride a school bus, be able to get their library cards, and find out all the different resources that are available to them in their local community. So it was a phenomenal thing that we collaborated with the regional libraries in our area. So parents were really thrilled for this, because they were able to do a lot of summer activities that they weren't aware of, tutoring, different things. So it was a really eye-opener for some of these parents who unfortunately live in the community but don't know about their resources. And this is what the Family Success Initiative also does. We make sure that parents are aware of what's in their community. So part of the my teaching strategies that I do with our Family Success Initiative is I provide students with different opportunities to learn. And part of that I do with is cooperative learning. One of our lessons or modules that we had to do for family, for FSI, was a digital literacy. Digital literacy was, we were teaching our parents how to use their computers. We did a really long lesson on how to access a Passport, which is a parent access support system portal, where it's an online system that connects parents and guardians to important information about their child's education. So some of these parents were not able, they did not even have the skills to use computers. And through FSI and the digital literacy lessons, we were able to not take it a little step further, where they learned about internet safety, how to use Microsoft Word, different online children's reading programs. So this was really a positive thing for the parents, because now they're able to communicate with not only with the teachers, but also to see and be aware of what their children are doing online. And it was a really phenomenal thing for parents. It's a really eye-opener, because, I teach them, you have to monitor what they're watching, you have to limit it, not every day. Not every day. Another thing that we do in my class is I incorporate centers, like I said before. So parents are grouped, and they do rotations. So I'm located in elementary school, so a lot of the strategies that I do is I teach the parents exactly similar to how their children are learning in cooperative groups. So another rotation that I have is the writing center, where parents learn how to use high-frequency words. What are those? How do you use them? And in that center, they create flashcards. They learn how to alphabetize. They learn how to spell the words. by writing them 10 times each. They use the words in the sentence, and then on Fridays I give them a spelling test. This makes the connection between their elementary school child, because they would come home with this, and it's like, what is this? And all they would hear is, you know, my children are failing the spelling test. They don't know what the high-frequency words are. So I'm bridging that connection with the parent. One of my philosophies is if you teach the parent, you can reach the child. And this is really an eye-opener. You see the children are learning, their grades are increasing. Parents are examples of what the parents are doing, like they're writing samples of how they're using their native language to help them with the English, which is another thing that they're using. So these are samples of not only are the children learning, or the parents are learning what the children are learning, but they're sitting down together to do homework, and it's really amazing. It's really amazing. It's phenomenal to see all these things happening in our program. I also have access to reading centers. So I tell my parents, it's not just reading to them, but you also have, you know, books on tape. We have bilingual books. We have a variety of literature. So parents have access to the K-5 reading curriculum that's taking place in their classroom. So they have access. So that's pretty much pre-teach what the parents are learning. So when the children come home, they're able to sit mm-hmm. down and be familiar with it and how to pronounce certain things. And here's my little teach the parent, you reach the child. Parents are learning how to read with their children. They're learning, these parents come in the morning, they sit down, and you see on the right-hand side, we have Angel sitting there. He's a kindergarten student. The parents learned how to read the book, so, you know, he's listening to his mom read. And if you look on the right, that's another one of our students where she's actually reading to the mom. So it's a phenomenal combination of what they're learning, and just to see them engaged is just amazing. Another, supporting K-12 student success. Parents are learning how to write book reports. And it's amazing because I have a multi-level ESL class, and it's wonderful to see their growth. I start from the very basic, where parents are, one of them, you see the given tree. They're actually, they learn how, what's an author, what's the title of the book, what's an illustrator, how do you do a summary, what are the characters. So all of these are lessons that I incorporate in our FSI program so that parents, when they come home and they have a book report assignment, they know ahead of time how to do this. And these are actual samples of our students in FSI, the parents, that I've created. I've also created a part where, with Common Core, I teach the parents like, to think critically. What would you change in the story? Why would you change it? Instead of maybe a child, maybe it would have been a little girl, and why? So they're thinking, just so that when they're reading to their children and talking with their children, they're able to have that communication with them. Another thing that they also do is they provide, I have a space there where there are new words that they come across with. They translate them into Spanish, English, now they know how to pronounce it, they know it. So it's really a good support system for them. Since we came back from school, a lot of the parents were, they were the first time, this is their second year, and their children were starting kindergarten, and they were like, Miss Cuevas, you know, my child is antsy and scared, and so what did I do? I provided the Kissing Hand. It's a beautiful book where, you know, parents were able to have that connection with their child and actually take it home and read it, if you haven't, some of you familiar with it or not. But it's just basically an experience. So I do it through literature also with our parents. And what's phenomenal is that they're writing it. They're speaking it. And here's another one, Love You Forever. It's another beautiful book that I use for parents. It's a really a crier, you really tissue box there. Beautiful book of how it's a full circle of things. And this is their actual drawing. Their parents are like, Ms. Cuevas, I don't know how to draw. Yes, you can. Look at the amazing stuff you're doing. So it really helps them. This is how we're supporting K-12 student success. Here's another picture of Love You Forever. With both, like I said, some parents decide to do it in Spanish and then they translate it in English. So it's a phenomenal way of them incorporating what they're learning. Another thing that we're doing to support K-12 student success, parents are learning how to speak in front to their peers. These are parents that the principal at Amazon, Ms. Vega, she's like, Ms. Cuevas, your program is amazing. These parents would just come home, I mean, they would just drop off their children and leave. No participation whatsoever. And then let them know now they're actually speaking to their peers. They're learning how to do oral presentations. They're learning how to, and you'll see in the slides, how to become even leaders in the school. And the principal is just like, I can't believe this is amazing. Where have you been? How come they had these programs before? So it's really good to see all of that. And then we're empowering parents to be leaders, leaders in their own communities, leaders in their schools. The FSI parents are members of the school site council at Annandale. This is something the principal's like, Ms. Cuevas, I would only have maybe one parent, but you're begging them to come. It's like they think that we're just a drop-off system. But now they're establishing that connection, that partnership between the principal and parents. So now she knows, you know, that this program is working. She's so thrilled. She says she wishes she could have been here to speak on behalf of the program. She loves our program. And here at the ELAC, the English Language Advisory Committee, she said it was a challenge for her also, but our FSI students at Annandale are taking leadership roles. So 100% of the FSI students in our program are actually leaders. And we have the president there, which is Alejandra Flores, vice president, Luz Flores, secretary. We have the parliamentarian. I mean, this is amazing because it gives empowers the parents to take leadership roles. And here you'll see FSI in action.
The Family Success Initiative Program provides ESL courses to parents of K-12 LAUSD children at their child's school site.
These people who are coming here are the lifeblood of our country. They're a real American dream. And I'm helping them to go from the jobs no one wants to their children getting the jobs that help America. That's a dream. One of the most impressive things that I've heard from multiple students is that they now do their homework with their kids. They're setting an example for the love of learning, for the desire to learn.
The class is helping me to how to work with my children with their homework and learning their work and how to understand.
I really enjoyed my visit through the Family Success Initiative because I got to see not only were our parents developing their English skills, and you could see really building confidence in English, presenting on different topics, but they were learning about concepts that were really relevant to them as parents, and they're things that are not only going to help them, but they're going to help their children succeed in school as well. So I was really impressed at the integrated approach of learning English as well as learning content knowledge at the same time. We know that a lot of our families may not have formal education, and that's why our schools are such important hubs, not just for the education of our kids, but also for the education of the entire family. And so offering this program is incredibly important. Learning English will help our parents just in general in the world, of course, but it'll help them be advocates for their students. It'll help them support their child's learning at home. So I think it's an incredibly powerful tool to help the overall education of our kids. And we know education is not just about students. It's a whole family endeavor. So I think this initiative really builds on that promise, and I'm excited to see it continue and see it again.
I also forgot to mention I'm also an academic counselor here at the Skill Center, so I always empower parents about HISET and different career technical education that we have. And with that note, here is my former student who was in our program with FSI last year at Farmville Elementary School, and she just recently enrolled at the graphic design class here at the Delhi Skill Center. She's here to give you her experience.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Ana Jimenez. I have two children. My son is 18 years old, and my daughter is 11 years old. I was in the FSI program last year at Farmer Elementary School with a cool and nice teacher as well. I want to be an example to my children. That's why I enrolled at the Skills Center in the graphic design class, to help me prepare for the tomorrow. This class will provide my family with financial stability and well-being. I'm grateful to you for offering these types of programs that assist communities, families, and most important, our children, because they are and will be the future leaders. Thank you.
Ms. Cuevas,
yes.
If you don't mind.
How are you?
First of all, I want to congratulate you and your staff because this is quite an innovative program. And it certainly caught my attention. So I have some questions, not to second guess. They're just because I want to process something about the program.
Sure.
So could you share the length of the program in terms of weeks? If I enroll as a parent, what's the expectation?
Well, when the students enroll in the program, it's really up to the student. For example, Anna was there last year, and she saw me like, okay, I can move on forward with this. A lot of things that I do is encourage our parents, like, let's do high school, let's do career at, you know, a career technical education, let's do, there's things out there for you and your family. So parents have the option of either continuing with our program, because we just piloted the program last year, and some of those same students are still registered with me this school year. So it's on a year-to-year basis, as long as we have funding. I don't know, maybe you have an answer to that?
I think as needed, too, depending on what the needs of the students are, well, the participants, so the parents may need help with ELEC, with homework. So Ms. Cuevas gives them the tools to do the parenting as well as the empowerment of collaborating with the school that she's at, as well as the parents and meeting specific issues. Sometimes it's a disability issue, so it's connecting the elementary school with the students.
And a lot of times what I do when they enter my program, I've created like a goals. What is your goal? So part of it is I do like an informal assessment with them. I sit down and I talk to them about the program. What is your goal? Is your goal just to, you know, help your children with school? So we talk about, we have goals, we have the successful learners, we talk about goals, short term, long term. So it's really catered to the needs of the student.
Okay, so is it fair to say that it could be a semester if they wanted to? And is it two hours a day, 3 hours a day?
Currently, I'm at 2 hours at each location. I know our principals are like, Ms. Cuevas, we need you for 4 hours. We need you here for half the day. I said, well, we have to ask our admin about that. But, yes, so it varies. My understanding is each site is different. So I'm currently Monday through Friday, 2 hours at each site.
And then lastly, how many teachers are involved at each site in this program?
So I'm the only teacher at these two sites, at Farmdale and Annandale Elementary School. I'm the only teacher there, but I know that we have them throughout the district.
Fine, thank you.
So I'm really touched by the teach the parent, reach the child. That's unbelievable true, unbelievably true, and this brings a real smile to my face, and I know that everybody in adult education is truly engaged in what I would call God's work. So thank you for what you're doing. And I can't think of a better investment of resources than into programs like this that helps lift people from illiteracy and from poverty for generations to come. So as far as LARIC dollars are concerned and whatever we can do at LACCD, this is a program that really, really resonates with me. So I had just one question. When you talked about students, because I think it was 339, is that 339 parents that you're serving? Your first slide had some demographic data on it.
Okay. And I think that's the average
Well, I was wondering how many parents, how many people are in this program right now? At least, how many parents are actually engaged themselves in this?
So we have an average throughout the district about, I would say, 25 to 30 students.
Yeah, that's the average.
Per program?
There is the total number of students enrolled.
Enrolled.
The number that are actually parents is very close to that. It's about 300 or
so. Okay. It's just an amazing program, and thank you for the work that you do. And it's what we need. So thank you.
You're welcome. The admin, you know, it comes from the bedroom support system. It's just amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, just a quick thank you, Ms. Cuevas, for coming and presenting. You did an excellent job. I really want to thank our student, Ms. Jimenez, really exemplifying the skills that you learned in your class to be a very confident public speaker, very articulate, and really send us a wonderful message about and really personifying what this program is all about. So I really want to say a special thank you, Ms. Jimenez, for joining us and presenting to the board this afternoon. Thank you.
So the word that popped in my head was inspired, really, by what you do, by what the students do for their children. And one of the things that's great about LARIC and great about our open public meetings is this opportunity, really, to see the great work being done everywhere. And so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And so, you know, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I guess this is what I'm thinking, like, from the LARIC office, how much do you guys know about this that you can come and share? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I have been trying to do some of the ESL classes at our elementary schools, and we have Spanish immersion schools, but just trying to get that started has been difficult. I can totally see using this model as a way to come in and work with my team. So wondering from LARIC staff, is there information that you can come and help me with at Silver City to kind of get this going, or just...
I'll be willing to come and help you.
Awesome. Perfect. But again, this is the whole point, is hearing these great ideas that we can replicate.
So one of the things from the LARIC perspective was to pilot this initiative and then gather some data just to make sure that this was a successful model and something that we could replicate. If I understand it correctly, I believe that LAUSD is planning to scale up this program because it was really successful.
Yeah.
And so from LARIC perspective, then we need to bring that information to the point person's team and repackage it, right? I believe that Mr. Stark, and hopefully I'm quoting him correctly, but I believe that Mr. Stark is certainly willing to share this information and share the curriculum, what has been created, with all of the members from LARIC so that we can all benefit from the pilot and the information that has been gathered.
Sure.
I just had a question in regards to capturing the attendance of the data. What are you listed under? Is it parent involvement? Is it crisis parenting? Is it
ESL? What's the class? Is it an ESL class?
It's an ESL. And then you said you had multi-levels in that class?
Yes, I have. Well, yes, because their parents, you know, they come with different backgrounds. Yes.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a forum multi-level.
And thank you.
So I just had a question. Sure,
no,
that's
problem.
So many.
No problem.
If you don't mind.
No problem.
You may not have the data, and that's okay. But is one of the things that possibly you're looking at is improved attendance and for students? I know that that's a district initiative. I've heard about it on the radio. And then the other is grades as well. Is that also an improvement in students' grades, something that you're seeking maybe at the secondary level, A through G completion rate, if you're familiar with that? Are those some of the things potentially that you're looking at in terms of data for those involved? For those families involved.
Yes, I can attest to what's happening in the two programs that I'm currently working. Attendance has increased at the elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but a lot of the students that are English as a second language in the elementary schools have actually transitioned out. So they're in EO side. So that's data that we're not collecting. I was going to talk to Matthew about collecting stuff, data like that. Because you see all these are important factors, even with the self-testing, the California English Language Development that it's done at the elementary schools. I'm seeing a lot of increase in that. And I think that's important data that we need to collect. But yes, I do see improvement in attendance, participation with parents is like phenomenal. It's like they're there. So they are participating. The students are increasing their attendance. They are coming to school a lot more. There's a lot of incentives that we are providing. Yes. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, let me just interject, and I'm sure whatever I don't cover, Matthew will cover. So in terms of sort of the next level data that we're looking at, and certainly all the things you mentioned, Mr. Yosky, as well as, we're working closely with our Division of Instruction to really identify, where some of these connections are between particularly like reclassification rates, for example. How does that work in terms of, is there a connection and a correlation with our parents in these programs and increased? We believe there will be. We'll be able to make a lot of those connections, and we look forward to kind of delving into that data. But I would say at the first level, we've seen, just tremendous feedback. Probably more on the qualitative side, which is fine initially, but as we're sort of, looking at sort of that next level data, we're really looking towards our kind of K-12 partners to kind of let us know what data points they're looking at and what the connections are. But we do know that the demand in terms of from our local districts and principals at the elementary schools has really increased significantly. So somebody mentioned funding earlier, and absolutely, as we scale up, we have to look at how we're going to be able to sustain these programs moving forward because, obviously with the funding we're looking at, it makes it difficult to expand, which is something we certainly would want to do in the future. So, thank you.
And I'm sure, just a data point that's critical that you are able to show now is parental engagement, which is one of the LCAP, a category within LCAP. So having your parents that are participating in this program now being leaders in your ELACs and your school site councils, that's absolutely measurable from the get-go. So that's amazing and something we definitely want to do.
So I'm proud to say that we're the first ones for the FSI, that actually from all the FSI sites that we have the full participation with them. So it's an honor to be able to say that we're the first ones.
Okay. Well, congratulations. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so the next item on the agenda, is there anything else? Sorry. Next item on the agenda is the LARIC office updates that will be provided, I think, by Lancey. But just to give you an idea of the reason that item is on the agenda, it really is intended to give an opportunity for staff to share LARIC projects and practices. And the idea is that all the districts, it's kind of what happened right now, it's with all, so that all the districts have this information and then can decide, is this something that makes sense for us to do within our own district? And it just, again, leads to these opportunities to provide support and resources to students in all of our region. So we're excited about that piece and the sharing of information. Lancey.
Thank you. In preparation for this, we have a complete list of tasks that I don't think that you guys want to go over. In place, we actually have some highlights of some of the more salient projects that we're currently working on. I'm just going to enumerate the projects, and if there's any specific questions that I may answer on any of those projects, I'll be more than happy to. As a matter of process, the LARIC office works in conjunction conversation with the point person's team. We generally seek the input most of the time. The only times where we don't do that is where time does not permit for it. But in general, we work with the point person's team to make sure that they inform the process that is followed on any of these projects. So these projects are at various levels of completion, some of which have a, you know, are currently underway. So, for example, the LAREC staff is putting together a marketing and outreach plan. And this, the next few items are actually requests from the executive team to the LAREC staff. So a marketing and outreach plan for LAREC. Once that is completed, then we will present that at the point person's team for their input. And once that input is included, then we will present it at the board. We're also working on an annual plan, writing framework and timeline for the next annual plan. Last time around, we had a little bit of a crunch in terms of time, and so the board requested that we write a plan for our next plan. And I think more to the point is a timeline, so that we do not have, you know, the same type of time crunches, and we're able to vet everything in a more relaxed manner. The staff also puts together a list of action items and reports to the board. And so as action items are given out, and the board we summarize and create one-page reports for the board to evaluate. Several of those were included in this board packet. And then we also worked over the last several weeks on a professional development plan and a data and accountability plan. Other projects that we're currently working on is the review of the three-year regional comprehensive plan in order to evaluate of all the things that were listed in there as items that were to be accomplished by the consortium, what was indeed accomplished, what was not, and perhaps explore some of the reasons and rationales for why were things done and why were others perhaps not completed. On the training front, we are also working on a data and accountability plan and committee or work group or some body to help address our data and accountability needs. We're also working on three-year planning webinars. Recently, there have been a number of webinars to inform the consortia. These webinars are put together by the AEP state office, and so the staff participates regularly so that we are up to date with what the requirements are for the next three-year plan. The staff has also participated on human serving design training presented by Acumen. And basically, this is just an approach to training and working with students that we may look at incorporating in some of the professional development that we're doing. Other items that we currently are working on is website development, revamping, and redesigning, and of course in preparation for the board meetings. So that's basically what the LAREC advisors and myself are currently working on. We also have some tasks, if you will, that our fiscal analyst works on. Would you like me to go over some of those?
I think she's going to go over some of her stuff, or So I'm assuming the fiscal analyst does all the stuff related to our budget items?
Yes.
Is there anything that we wouldn't know about, or we wouldn't? So things like data expenditure reports. What are just some of those ideas?
Yeah. Well, she's going to cover some of those. Mm-hmm. She doesn't cover all of these elements every single time, but basically she works on preparing the templates designs the templates for all of the reports that we have to provide that every district has to provide, and that's for the annual budget, also for the progress and expense reports, for the data and accountability reports, and for the LERC office fiscal reports. In addition to that, she also reconciles financial reports from member districts. She monitors LERC member districts' spending thresholds. As you remember, in the past we presented that now we have certain thresholds that we need to comply with, 15%, pretty much on a quarterly basis. In addition to that, Grace also works with member districts' fiscal representatives to provide technical assistance. She also consolidates financial reports and submit reports for certification on behalf of the consortium. She also ensures a timely and accurate submission of fiscal reports for all member districts.
Thank you.
Yes.
Discussion,
just a comment. Now seems like kind of a good time to make it. So I meet periodically, just because the three-year plan was mentioned. I meet periodically with our LUSD labor partners, UTLA in particular, United Teachers Los Angeles. I think as we're getting into the next three-year planning cycle, I'd like to see a steering committee group created that would be inclusive of the various labor partners from the LERC districts. And I'd like to see that kind of part of the sort of the infrastructure of maybe how the work groups and committees are put together as far as the three-year planning cycle. And so if it pleases the board, I'm wondering, could we just go ahead and sort of direct staff to look into creating that type of a steering committee?
Can I follow up with a question on that, Joe?
Sure.
So are you suggesting that we go to our union colleagues and ask them to have a representative on this group, or you're talking about management to get together and talk?
No, I think that's going to be up to each district to approach their respective labor partners. I just know on the LAUSD side, we've had clearly strong engagement from our labor partners, and I just feel like from my perspective, it would be a good idea to have opportunities for our labor partners to weigh in to, the process of the three-year planning cycle. So I'm not suggesting that it be mandated, but I think the opportunity should be sort of put out there for those who are interested in it.
Okay, so as long as it isn't negotiations per se, but is basically seeking their input into our plan as faculty colleagues, I think I'm happy with that. I'm just concerned that we end up negotiating outside of our process.
Oh, Adrienne, sorry.
Well, I think when we talk about professional development, we talk about the professional development framework. It's not a plan, it's a framework. So I want to make sure that there is a delineation there. But one of those items is regional planning and looking at that. So I'd like to carry what you're bringing forward, Mr. Stark, into that conversation as well, because I think it'll be timely with the whole concept that we're looking at.
Yeah. And I understand, Mr. Stark, what we're trying to do here, which is bring the people who are involved into our planning process.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to make sure that it's not characterized as a negotiation or isn't perceived as one, since we all... Well, I know we've got a union. I don't know if the other districts do, but I know we do. And certainly LA Unified does. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about Culver City or Burbank or Montebello, but...
we have a little one.
Yeah, well...
I have a little one. I don't know about everybody else.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
And I think my expectation, I guess, in the planning process of the three-year development, the development of the next three-year plan My expectation is that we would have, that it would be inclusive of lots of different stakeholders, right? And so one of those stakeholders, from my perspective, is absolutely labor partners. But my expectation is that the process for how we develop the plan would be inclusive of many stakeholders. All right. Oh, man, I flipped my thing again. See, Grace, did she disappear? There you are. Grace and I were great phone buddies yesterday, right, Grace?
Hi, good afternoon. I'll be presenting some of the upcoming due dates and fiscal 19 project and expenditure report. Please note that we had made some updates on the slides I'll be presenting based on the webinar last Friday. Next slide, please. So if you recall, in the last board meeting, I had mentioned that the fiscal 2018 final report, that's the report wherein the state is asking us to report on the arts of instruction and expenditures by program area. They had put a hold on that. It's no longer due on September 30th. The state is currently working on a new template, and we are planning to select the data this coming spring. For the Q4 report for 2018, the state had also extended the deadline for 30 days. So the member reports are now due October 1st instead of September 1st, and it has to be certified by the consortium by October 30th in lieu of September 30th. Next slide.
Sorry. Quick, back. The new final report is including the hours of instruction by program area for the past year.
Yeah. Got it.
Okay.
Next slide. For the state has also extended the deadline for the 2018-19 budget and work plan. It was supposed to be due September 30. It's been moved to October 30. And I have sent out the templates this week to request for the budget. And if you can just work with your fiscal reps, it's due to the LAREC office by October 15. So that would include your carryover plus the new allocation for 2019. And for fiscal 2019, Q1 ends on September 30. Next slide, please. We have here the tentative report by program area for 2017-18. If you recall from the previous board meeting, we were just solely looking at the different categories for AEBG. Now the state had included leverage funds such as WI, WIOA, CalWORKs for Kings, etc. We will keep you posted as we hear developments from the state about the reporting. Next slide. This is the new 2018-2019 progress and expense report. We had tried to simplify the form, so if you'll notice, it will just be requiring year-to-date or cumulative information as opposed to quarterly. And we had also included the full version in your packet for your reference. Next slide. And then we had also revised the narrative section of the report based on the requirements from NOVA.
So if you can, we had included a summary of activities and the corrective action plan. This is where you put in the proposed action steps that have to be taken if you are spending, if your expenditures are below target. Next slide. So this is the draft progress and expense report for Q4. So out of the total $147 million for the consortium, we have spent about $129 million, or about 87% of the budget. Next slide, please. And we would just like to remind everyone of the target. Pretty much it's 15% per quarter, so Q1 is 15%, Q2 at 30%, Q3 at 45%, and Q4 at 60%. And if the targets are not met, a corrective action plan needs to be submitted along with the report.
So it's not really a plan, it's really you're documenting what your corrective action is in the bottom half of that question, mm-hmm. right? So it's not a separate document, it's actually within, yeah. Okay.
This is the do you have any questions?
Thank you, Grace. I'll call you with my questions.
Okay. Later.
Perfect, thank you. So, professional development framework. Okay. Adrienne. Is Elvis helping you? Or is he just going to stand over there?
Okay, so hi, I'm Adrienne Ann, as you know. This is my friend, Elsa. So we're going to talk about professional development framework. And we're very strategic when we say a professional development framework instead of a plan. Because we're about to enter our next three-year regional planning process. So we didn't want to create something, and this was robustly discussed at the Point Persons team, that would go overlap to that three-year regional plan, because we want to make sure when we go to that next step of planning that we're including all of our stakeholders and making sure that we are also looking at what their needs are and also comparing this to other frameworks that we have. Is that the problem? Perfect, thank you. So that's why it's called a framework versus a plan, okay? So moving forward, and you have, an expanded narrative in your packet of information, or I know it's for the landscape. So we looked at, in the point people, when we discussed it, we looked at three overarching themes that we wanted to address across this framework: articulation, best practices, and regional planning. So in the next year, these three themes will cut across all of our different elements of professional development. Moving forward, and then going back to Michelle's comment earlier, is we want to bring back the SMEs, but we're calling them professional learning communities, but the same concept. Looking at basic skills, ASC, ESL, and a counseling collaborative. And really looking at creating a networking, opportunity for faculty across districts, as well as professional training and development of best practices and alignment, because that work was important and we were doing it across this district. Topics that we wanted to look at.
I just want to add that in your packet, agenda item 3.4 is the document that Dr. Mullen is referring to.
This PowerPoint.
Well, there's a PowerPoint and there's also a narrative that looks something, mine has notes on it, but it looks something like this.
3.4, got it. Thank you.
Can you all hear me? Is there any back to
your
point?
Yeah.
Do you want me to wait for my You can hear me. Okay, I'm going to go on.
Here.
This one. Okay, thank you. Okay, so how we want to look at is determining the topics. We want to do a short survey
to faculty, staff, and administrators. We also want to look at what everybody put in their WE02 professional development surveys, because we want to see the connection. This work has already been, a lot of this work, or some of this work has been done, so we want to make sure that we're building on that. Because all of our districts had to, you know, they're in the process of completing that professional development plan. Possible topics that we see on the forefront, and it's really just increased our knowledge, is AB 705, which I'm going to present one of the college models today that we're doing at West LA College. We have the community college non-credit application process that we developed in our district. It's also being mirrored against AB 3101, which our district is leading with how we look at non-credit, the application process as a whole across the state. Dual enrollment versus dual credit. That was an area that we were very involved in with the adult education, was dual credit, dual enrollment, and now it's kind of moving towards dual credit, and that's really directed by legislation as well. Technology integration, as well as transitions and accelerations. So we want to look at those. And then another topic is really how to build our articulation, and that's going back to that common theme, because that's something that we're building across the adult schools into the community college. Okay. Oops, we're a little off center there. And this is going back to what you were talking about earlier, Mr. Stark, is really looking at the next three-year regional planning process. The next plan is due in May, June of next year, and it'll go from 2019 to 2022. We want to do a similar process, or we're recommending is point people a similar process that we did the first time we wrote the regional plan, which is a host of meetings that went across district. We broke out and subgroups. One of the groups definitely could be what you described earlier, as well as by program area. And looking at starting off with the Innovation Lab, which is really kind of build the ideas and the momentum, doing a series of half-day workshops and then a summit, which where we would share what we've learned across the program groups and try to bring them together. This year, what's different with the regional planning, and they had a workshop yesterday, where several of us are going to a training next week that's in Sacramento regarding regional planning, and I feel like it's the LA rule, I'll be honest with you. The plan is limited to 35 pages. You know, last year our plans were over, that last three-year plan was over 200 pages. So the state has really, you know, zeroed in. We want to know what you're going to do and how you're going to get there. We don't need all the steps in between. The first time we wrote, we had to put what we're going to do, all the steps in between, and, you know, where we're going, and lots of different charts. And they really have zoned in on, you know, this is the important elements that we need for you to get to the next step, and that we can, they can pull information from those, any of those plans, because they'll be submitted through NOVA, and share with the legislation. So it'll be interesting to see how that moves forward. But they have already been some webinars. They're also going to do a roadshow, which I know several of us will go to, and we'll encourage a lot of involvement across stakeholders in that. So that's the framework. It's, you know, and it's, the reason we're calling it a framework, again, not to be married to something so rigid, but also that it's flexible and we can bend and move with it as we see necessary. One call out that I didn't do back here, and I should have, is the Counseling Collaborative. That's something we want to move from the Community College District and create a, it's an SME, but we're calling it, or I'd like to call it the Counseling Collaborative, and really create that strong network between the adult school counselors into our non-credit and credit counseling. Not only do you need a bridge into non-credit counseling, we want you to also have that connection into our credit programs. Because we know our students, and I'm calling we, Laird students, some will transition into our non-credit programs, others will transition directly into our credit programs. Especially as we build these articulation agreements, they're not all going to be built from the adult school into non-credit. They're going to be built also from the adult school into our credit programs. We really want to make sure we have successful transitions and that we're putting our students on a trajectory for success. With that Counseling Collaborative, we were looking at at least two meetings, and the most important meeting, which I have to go to the district counseling subject matter group in our district, is to make sure the adult schools are included into a counseling day that we already do with the USDs on the K-12 side. I want to bring the adult schools into that fold, into that meeting, because I think that's such an important process. So I called it the Counseling Collaborative. So that was that particular call out. And now I'm going to transition to Elvis, so he can talk to you about the data and accountability concept and that work group idea.
So I get one slide. Let's hope it doesn't work. So. Okay, so the data and accountability. So yeah, we also had a healthy conversation with the point person team regarding this. It was mostly about the mission and vision of data and accountability in the work group, but this is what we agreed upon. We agreed upon that it would be a work group that consists of no more than 3 members per district. It would be co-chaired by a point person and another person to be identified with support by the Larry staff. This is going to be called the Data Accountability Work Group. The focus will be to identify priority focus areas, and of course these are sort of areas that come from the state, right? Aligning definitions in terms of barriers to employment, AAP outcomes, and services received. So all of that good stuff that we sort of submit to the state, and incorporating new policies as needed. Any questions?
I sure do, and you guys know I do. So anybody else have questions?
Start yourself.
Huh?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
So I am very interested, Dr. Mullen, as you know, you and I have talked about this, regarding the articulation between counselors. And I don't think that it's a particularly expensive venture. I don't think, in other words, there's a lot of resources that need to take place. So could you provide a little bit more detail? So are we looking at, for this meeting in December, for this to involve the non-credit program counselors from LACCD along with the counselors that serve adult school to meet in December, and what do you envision that meeting dealing with?
So it would be building on the SME that was counseling, so we have that group. We want to expand it beyond those members, because I think each school had one or two people. And having really like a networking opportunity with an educational component. I've identified a counselor in my district who is going to help me lead this charge, because I need someone who has time on task to do it. I mean, it's a great concept. I can't lead it because I don't have the time on task. And I also need someone who's a current counselor that has that social, that expertise within the counseling world. So she'll pull together the non-credit counselors that we've identified, and that's more than 9, because many of our colleges have split that position to make them counselors that are language specific. So it would have an educational component, probably. Since 705 is so timely right now, we'll probably look at that and explain how that works and how that's going to affect students articulating into our district and what that means. Because then we'll go in more detail in the next group of slides that I'll present about that. That would be one of them.
So will there be an opportunity also for example, let me give you a concrete example. We are partnered with Los Angeles Valley College. So in a meeting with them, I learned about their programs when I met with Dr. Marriott, very insightful. But he equally, when he was discussing with me, learned about programs that we had that they did not. And so for me, the light bulb went on. I thought, we need to have this articulation occurring with counselors, because they're the ones that deal with students and can inform students, you're interested in such a program, we don't have it, but so-and-so does. So is that sort of thing going, is there going to be that opportunity?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Udiosky mentioned something that I really appreciate, which is this idea that we really, I think to a large degree, we've made some progress in many areas, but I don't know that we're still behaving as a regional entity, right? And so I really want us to, in this next cycle, make sure that we get that part right in terms of, moving toward a status quo, which is everybody's chasing enrollment, in some cases ADA or whatever,
to really working more as a region so that we're creating various pathways and being very thoughtful and strategic about those pathways, and not, in some cases, duplicating effort. In some cases, that may need to happen. But I just kind of want to do a little amen to what Mr. Uyasti mentioned, because I think this time around we really have to get that right in terms of that collaboration and really working in the interests of the student and not, you know, limiting ourselves to the silos of the past. So thank you.
Well, and just to address that, Mr. Stark, as well, the articulation work will help that. The other part, I meet monthly with the adult ed deans that are across our district, so there's 9. Many other staff come with them as well to this meeting. And we're really looking at building an adult education experience that is student-centered and guided. We really want to guide that experience and make it meaningful, relevant, and really put a student on a pathway to get in and out. We're not interested in keeping a student. We want to make sure that we're meeting their educational goals in the best way possible and supporting them and creating a culture of care. That's our goal.
So I have a couple of questions, comments. One, I echo what Mr. Uyasti said and Mr. Stark about the need for the collaboration. I think Michelle Cohen mentioned earlier, we started with a lot of collaboration and then it died almost this year in terms of collaboration beyond the Point people. And we need to bring that back, bring it back for the staff, the students, the administrators, everybody. That piece needs to happen in order for it to feel truly collaborative. The expectation for sure is that as our Point people are our voice. So Elvis is the voice for Culver City when he's at a Point person's meeting. But at the last meeting, and this is the piece,
John,
got it. I was like, I'm going to get these names. Today I'm just off on names. But the statement that I made last time at the meeting, and Adrienne, you were in and out, Elvis was late, so it might not have been captured, but the statement that I made is, the LARIC board is directing the LARIC project manager and advisors to create a proposal for the structure, format, and timeline for the two work groups, professional development and data and accountability, and present the proposal at the next meeting. That was the directive, very clear with all of those components. So I guess that what I'm going to do from now on is look at John and say, John, write this down, right? So that we're clear. I think that the framework has elements of some of this stuff, but one of the things we want to move past is just talking about what we're going to do and have a guide for how those things are going to take place. So I guess that part of that is there. I'm clear that part of that is there. The survey is there. When do you think that might go out?
We were waiting to get your blessing to move forward because we don't move unless you say yes. So we can turn that around. A lot of that work is already done with the WIOA 2 program, professional development plan. We can pull from that and also survey additionally, which is what our plan is to do. But we didn't do anything until we brought it here.
Right, and so that was the reason for the proposal, was because we had,
that proposal was very, so we had a very robust discussion.
Right.
I would say almost on the point of heated.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was very structured, but did not allow the flexibility of the group to respond. And some of the Point people, I being one very outspoken on this topic, was that we really needed to hear from the faculty that we represent to make sure this plan represented their needs. And so it was down to very specifics of, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, but it didn't allow that flexibility that, for when I built professional development, things in my district across my colleges, the framework has been a very good tool to address needs and move something forward. So just because it's not as detailed as a directive, I still believe it will move, and I believe that we will have an outcome.
It's just, it's in a different format. It's packaged differently. It doesn't mean the results will not be the same.
Well, and I think part of it is that we've been talking about a lot of these things for the whole year, right? We've been talking about what we're going to do. And this is not, this is, you know, so I directed, the directive was to Lancey and the advisors only because, so I want to clarify, as an executive team member, we do not have the authority to direct the point people as a group. I can direct Elvis to do anything, but I cannot direct Yanita to do something, right? I want, Elvis represents Culver City in terms of his input as things get developed. So you guys drive the direction because you're driving the conversation from each of our member agencies, absolutely. And then working with the LARIC staff to create and develop something, presenting it to the executive team so that we have, you know, input and eyes also. But you guys are actually absolutely driving everything. And
I think that'll be a discussion, too, that we'll have in, I guess, Chapter 2 of this meeting, which is the work group discussion, is looking at organizational structure. Mm-hmm. I know that that's something, and then we're mixing apples and oranges here. It's kind of, we're kind of in a fuzzy gray logic area right now. But looking at organizational structure, what roles and responsibilities fall within those structures? When we wrote our structure 3 years ago, we had this very clear delineation. And if I'm overstepping where we need to be.
Well, and I think that is absolutely should be a part of the discussion for the in our next meeting.
Right.
But, yeah.
We have executive point people. We didn't have program advisors at that point. So my understanding is, and this is kind of a different, I don't know, a model, that the project director is really the direct connect between us and the point people, right? So it's the exec, this project director and the point people. You can direct the project director. He directs us.
He does not direct Elvis.
Okay, so
sorry.
May I?
Yeah, absolutely.
So a couple of things here. First of all, the two critical points that I've heard thus far, other than the topic we're about to enter into, is the absolute need for additional professional development of this type and the absolute need to collaborate and make certain that there are as many people as possible, particularly our faculty and teachers, engaged. So I think that's what I think we should focus on at the moment. With AB 705 coming down the pike, which will provide a huge opportunity for adult education in many respects. I think that's a good conversation to have. So I would suggest we kind of focus on that for the time being, and let's see if we can get some consensus around this work group concept that Adrian is referencing. And then just keep moving forward.
Right, I agree.
Yeah, and I would agree. I mean, I think at this point, what we are looking at is not necessarily being too prescriptive at this
point,
because without that input, you know, because we've kind of some of us have made some of those mistakes in the past of, you know, wanting to sort of get it all, you know, neat and tidy, and but yet if we're not getting that input from the very folks who are going to be implementing the work,
right,
then we're really missing the mark, and then we're going to have to, it's going to cause other problems down the road. So I think in terms of approaching it more of a framework and then using some guiding principles then as we get into doing the deeper work with the work group, seems like an approach that makes sense, at least from my perspective.
Okay. So just as information, the PD we all plan to do at the end of October, we want to start thinking about the future and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I used our WIOA plan. I used what we talked about in terms of PD for LARIC to actually write our WIOA plan, and then what we did in LARIC was actually different. So I have to explain that in our new WIOA plan, and you're absolutely right. The WIOA PD plan is should be a driving force, because what we're saying is this is what we want to do for PE for PD. So I think that makes perfect sense.
Okay.
So any other
questions?
Do we need a formal motion, or is it just consensus on the part of the board to have them move forward?
I'd like to see this happen.
Okay. And I certainly would, too. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The presentation was about what we're going to do to move forward with PD and work groups. So this is the direction, and then we'll get more detail as every month that something happens.
Right,
so yes, and I hope,
yes,
we will definitely, we'll
move it, and we'll provide reports. Got it. We just want to make sure we
have the opportunity to move without having,
you know, we want to make sure we provide
updates, for sure. Mm-hmm. Great. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're
going to
talk about AB 705.
That's the next thing.
Oh, so you're
right,
don't go anywhere. Just grab
your other thing. Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. There's somebody in between. Sorry. Sophia Mayoral, LAUSD AEBG advisor, will provide a 2019 LARIC conference update. Sorry. You could be on standby.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is a pleasure to be here. My name is Sofia Mayoral, and I am a new AEPG teacher advisor for LAUSD. I am a former ESL and high school student from Huntington Park Community Adult School in LAUSD. I was encouraged to go to college and university by the staff at Huntington Park Adult School. And then I became a teacher, then a teacher advisor. And all together, I've been in LA Unified School District for like 29 years.
Wow.
Yes. And another year going to school, another year volunteering, so 31 years with LAUSD.
Thank you.
As the LARIC conference co-chair, I am here today to give you an update on the 2019 LARIC conference. The conference will take place at the University Sheraton Hotel on Saturday, March 9th, 2019, and this year's conference theme is the LARIC Experience: Innovate, Integrate, and Motivate. Justin is working with Erica, the graphic designer, regarding the work, the artwork. And then the call for presenters will be posted on the LARIC website sometime next week. We will send an announcement as soon as it is posted. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophia. Welcome. Okay, Diana. I promise to listen quietly this time.
I liked it. I liked the conversation. It makes better programs. So I'm going to share with you a presentation that was done by Dr. Allison Tamora and Mr. Angel Miramontes at our AB 705. We've had several trainings. In fact, we had another one this morning about this legislation and how it's going to be put into practice into our district. So I'm sharing their presentation with permission, and it really kind of gives you an overview of what AB 705 is. This will be an ongoing conversation because it's legislation, policy, into practice. So it's lived nine ways, but we're trying to have a consistent flavor across all of our campuses. So AB 705 is requiring, and I'm not going to read all the slides, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version, but you'll have the reference as well. It's requiring that students be at college level math and English within 1 year. We know other research supports that if students are in college level math and English in 1 year, we will retain them and they'll persist. We do a really good job retaining students. It's the persistence part that we're working on, right? This only applies to students who choose transfer as their educational goal. So when they come into our district, they go through an education orientation and then they have a counseling appointment. It used to be assessment. The assessment is off the table because now we're placing everybody directly into college-level math or English. And they have to be at that within 1 year. If we're going to place them below As the slide shares, colleges are prohibited from placing students into pre-transfer courses in math or English unless the following conditions are met, and this is so critical. Students must be highly unlikely to succeed in a transfer level course, and enrollment in the pre-transfer course will improve the student's likelihood of completing transfer level courses in 1 year, in a 1 year time frame. These are really hard to prove. You have to have the documentation in place. I'm not sure, and Dr. Miller can chime in on this as well. And this is from the letter that I gave you. I gave you two letters of guidance from the state, one being regarding basic skills math and English, and then the second letter regarding ESL. Basic skills math and English, we have to be in compliance by fall of 2019. We have another year for ESL, which is the fall of 2020. The clock starts on that 1 year once they enter a sequence series of courses, either in math or English. So once they enter into a sequence leading to a transfer level course, their clock starts. They have 1 year.
I just wanted to reference that the documents Dr. Mullen is referring to are on agenda item 3.5 on the package.
Thank you. So the goal is really to improve all students' reading, writing, and math competencies, and their confidence, which is so important, needed for them to achieve their educational and career goals without adding units or creating barriers or delays to their success. So what was happening as practice across all of our colleges is that we would think a student needs, you know, another additional skill set, and our response has a system often was to create another level, another class. So we are having students test in 5 or 6 levels below transfer. But if you look how we schedule classes, you can't even request that next class until you complete the first one successfully. So you're in fall, you take Math 1, I'm just using numbers, and you need Math 2 in spring. You can't get, you know, Math 2 necessarily in spring because you haven't completed Math 1. So now you're waiting until summer or fall. So then we have elongated your sequence tremendously, right? So the legislation will not allow us to add these levels, right? So the legislation says you can't add another class. You can have curricular design. We may need to redesign some of our courses. We need to create co-curricular support. So it's not a co-requisite, which means it's required to be taken. It's a co-curricular support, which you can take paired at the same time you're taking that math or English class to reinforce the elements that are being taught or the competencies that are being taught in that class. And then we're looking at the redesign of assessment and placement and non-curricular support. So we're looking at how do we assess where students are at in the placement and what support do they need to be successful. I don't know why everything's a little off right now. Co-curricular design non-credit prep classes. So what we're doing is with AB 705, Dr. Miller shared with you, it's a great opportunity for adult education to work with our credit partners as well as provide opportunity for growth and support of our students coming into our system. Our support cannot be tied to any English or math sequence because if it is, it starts at 1 year clock. So they will be offered independently of the credit math and English sequence. We're really going to focus on just-in-time instruction, which is if a student is weak in fractions, we're going to have workshops that just deal with just-in-time instructions, and it's going to be offered at the same time that the credit class is covering that lesson in the course. We're going to do the same on the English side as well. If it's paragraph building, we're going to make sure we have just-in-time instruction to address that need that's happening in the credit class. We're really using our CASAS testing as a way to look at diagnostic, using it as a diagnostic test with our students coming in and placing them in the necessary skill-building classes and even front-loading
that instruction, so when they actually offer it before the classes start, so when they get into the classroom, they're familiar with the concepts. We find many of our students have been out of school for a while, so we want to just build that foundation and refresh it. We know it's there, but we need to just refresh where they're at. And it really bring up the concepts and the terminology forward. So how is this working? At a college at West LA, and you can see this times the rest of, across our district, is our credit math and English faculty are working with our non-credit faculty and their deans to create the necessary supports that work with their population and their geographic area. Our non-credit programs have had great success with special populations, and we're showing that ripple effect because we've been able to build non-credit support classes for cohorts of students, and we're taking what we've learned, those lessons learned, and moving them forward to the general population. This gives you an idea of the difference between non-credit versus credit co-curricular support options. With non-credit, our classes are free. They're, you know, very similar to what you have in the adult schools. Our repeatability is unlimited. When you get on the credit side, you pay $46 a unit, credit unit. They're not eligible for financial aid because they're not the transfer level classes. They're support classes. And you can only be limited to 3 repeats. So if you're not doing well in your math class, and we have this credit support class, you only can take that 3 times. Where if you build it in non-credit, just in time, they can dip in and dip out where necessary. We have pass, satisfactory progress, and no pass, and then there's letter grades in the credit classes. Again, I talked about the enrollment flexibility, it's dip in, dip out. We do not generate FTS in non-credit, but we do generate positive attendance. We're building our co-curricular support classes to be part of certificate programs, which means we're reimbursed at the same rate as credit. Differences between faculty when teaching non-credit versus credit. Non-credit, the minimum quals are your bachelor's degree is what drives your qualification, and credit, it's a master's. The hourly rate is somewhat different, and for non-credit, we're paid usually about $5 less, and we have a lower cap. Our teaching load in non-credit is 25 hours, and then in credit is 12 to 15. So it just kind of gives you some ideas of, you know, the differences between the non-credit and the credit program. And then we do positive attendance and non-credit. And then credit is census-based. This looks at how we're redesigning to create these co-curricular supports for AB 705. We're looking at students in kind of 3 buckets. This is very general for the students with a transfer goal, students who have an AA or AS degree goal, and then students with certificate to make sure we're building the necessary supports. The first two, transfer and degree, they usually, the degree requirement is a transfer level math or English class. We want to make sure that we get them to that level in 1 year and provide the necessary support. Depending on their certificate, if it's credit or non-credit, they may be required to have a credit math or English, or they may not, just depending on what that certificate looks like. Either way, we're providing a diagnostic for support and identification as well as co-curricular non-credit classes. And then this is what we shared with our faculty, why we wanted to use the CASAS test. You know, WIOA, not all of our colleges had the WIOA 2 grant in play before we started adult education. Only 6 of our 9 had it. West LA is one of the ones that did not. So we had to go in and do a whole educational component of how this brings benefit and strength to your program. And that just shows the different points that we shared, which I'm in a room full of people who believe in the CASAS and WIOA 2 grant, but this is what we share with our faculty as well. And we've built really into our program, and this goes back to the Counseling Collaborative, is a huge counseling piece and advising piece to make sure our students are creating that successful transition from non-credit to credit, or from non-credit into their career goal. And that's all I have. And then there's Allison and Angel's information, but
Mullen?
I'm just going to add a couple of quick things. Thank you, Dr. Mullen, for that. In the community college world, as we look at our new funding formula, and as we look at the three buckets that we are concentrated on now, which is access, which is enrollment, equity, which is supporting our underrepresented populations from a diversity and equity point of view, and finally from success, this area is of critical importance to us because it takes our students who are forced into several semesters of pre-collegiate work, the majority of which never got through those levels and therefore left college. And it basically says you are going to immediately enroll them into college-level math or English based upon certain assessment requirements, but for the most part, they're going to get in, and you're going to provide whatever variety of wraparound services you need to in order to get them ready. So those wraparound services, if you will, in many respects now go down to our adult education programs in world. So it provides not only a significant opportunity for our students to get them prepared for the college level work that we will now ask them to do, but it also leads to greater success and greater equity. So our system, as is all community colleges, but primarily I'm speaking about LACCD and our nine colleges, we are attacking this with a vengeance, if you will. So it's a significant part of not only our adult ed and non-credit strategy going forward, but on our equity and success formula as well, because at the end of the day, this is all about students and getting them through the system in a much more effective and efficient manner.
Good question. Do you see any circumstances in which students that are at the community college could be referred to the adult school?
We have not necessarily addressed that. I don't see why it could not happen, but we've not looked at it. But we're because once someone's clock starts, we have an obligation to get them through that 1 year. Okay. They have 1 year to get up to through the college level math and English. I would see maybe a referral. I don't know if Dr. Miller, you want to.
Well, I would just.
Prior to that.
Yes, exactly. I would basically say that the goal is to have students walk into our doors, quote unquote, college ready for the math and English to complete. So any adult school, whether it's a LARA consortium partner or anybody else who does that, then please do, so that, you know, when they get to community colleges, they're ready for credit work.
So when you have a student walk in the door that isn't ready for work, for college work, like we were saying before, the five levels below or that situation, my guess is those people are still going to walk in your door. And with what you just described, so I'm just trying to understand it, with what you just described, that there's no assessment, so they go straight into a class that they may not be ready for, and then you guys will create a class to get them ready, or do the just-in-time.
It's co-curricular, so it's the same. They're taking two paired classes.
It's a supplemental instruction.
Yeah, supplemental
concept,
instruction,
right.
co-curricular support. But we have students that are coming in, and that only kicks in if they can do math and English. We have so many other avenues for students to take classes that don't require them to take math and English that first semester. Once they determine into their math or English sequence, then that 1 year clock starts.
I guess my question, as I'm processing the partnership piece.
Let me try to answer it for you. I think to the extent that Culver City and West LA sat down together and talked about this group of students and said, how can we collectively work towards the benefit of the students in our service area, I would imagine that relationships could be worked out that would provide opportunity for both Culver City as well as West LA.
So we have a common practice across our district with nine colleges, but we still have nine colleges, so a lot of that question is a local decision.
Right.
And it has to be, as Dr. Miller described, worked out between that adult school
or that USD, because you know, we have traditionally students that are coming directly from high school, and the college that they're working with.
And I would suspect Mr. Arsati is already thinking about sitting down with Doug Marriott at Valley and talking about this as well for the Burbank.
Thank you.
That's it. I was ready.
They're going to make me stop anyway, so I'm just going to stop now. Okay. Next thing on our agenda, we actually have no information items today, but now we're going to go to our board member reports. Emilio, do you want to start? Or do you have anything for today?
Sure, just two brief things. The first is that we are launching a new CTE program that we're excited about. That's physical therapy assistant. And that began this week. We have a new instructor that joined us, and we're excited about that. And then the other is, this is not something to be excited about, but it's just information, and that is that we are launching our WASC self-study process. And so we did meet about a week ago, and actually it'll be 2 weeks ago on Saturday, and we have a couple more meetings here in October as we initiate that process with our stakeholders.
Thank you. Dr. Miller.
Yeah, so LACCD, I kind of alluded to a couple things already. As a district, we are heavily engaged in developing a strategic enrollment management plans for our nine colleges. And a better way of saying it, that our nine colleges are heavily engaged in developing these plans that effectuate what is required under the new funding formula. And as a district staff is involved in helping our colleges to do that. I would call the new funding formula very, very similar to the local control funding formula on the K-12 level. And so it's something that from a campus climate and a college culture point of view, our college faculty, our staff, our administrators are just slowly getting their heads wrapped around it. And that's why the state has given us basically 3 years to implement that. I will say on enrollment for the fall semester, we're actually down roughly 3% across the district. However, our non-credit and adult ed enrollment is up. So that shows you the good work of Dean Mullen and our adult education deans, and certainly our faculty and others who are involved in that. And if there are two buzz terms / North Stars that our 114, now 115 community colleges, if you include the new online college, are focused on, it's something called Guided Pathways, which, as the name implies, is a very specific curricular pathways that lead to degrees or certificates or transfers. It's now kind of the holy grail of where we're going as a system to try to move people, help people move to success much more quickly, much more effectively, to help them with their lives and their careers. And that is guided by the overall community college vision for success that was approved by the Assistant Board of Governors and by our state chancellor, Eloy Oakley. So our world has changed a great deal, as K-12 did, I don't know how many years ago, with LCFF went into effect, but when it did. So we're working at that. So with that said, LACCD continues to appreciate being a member of this consortium and hopes to be an active and positive participant.
Thank you. Mr. Stark.
Just two comments. So concerning legislative priorities, I've mentioned before, I think the LARIC board should establish kind of a short list anyway of sort of common adult ed led priorities. And so LAUSD is going to be bringing some ideas soon to the table here for consideration. Finally, I definitely want to, as we did earlier, welcome our new colleagues from Montebello and both our new board member and the new point person. I certainly look forward to getting to know you both better and working with you more closely in the interests of serving our adult learners in the region.
I just want to say, I think as a board, we have, you know, there's a lot of history with this particular consortium, a lot of it good, and some of it, you know, maybe not so good, but, you know, I think we kind of have a responsibility as a board to kind of provide some, I'm using the word board a lot, onboarding opportunities, if you will, for new members. I think particularly around, you know, we have some obviously high stakes, high priority decisions and issues, you know, with this consortium, you know, around issues like funding, accountability, et cetera. So I'd like to see if we would have maybe consensus from the board to kind of brief them in particular, you know, our new members, particularly around some of the history and current status of the state audit findings. So I don't want to be a buzzkill because, you know, we've had a lot of positive things in this meeting, but there is kind of that lingering issue that I don't think has gone away, and I think it's important to kind of make sure our new members are kind of briefed regarding, you know, particularly the connection with LARIC, you know, not to get in Montebello's business per se, but at least with the connection with LARIC. And I think we should take the opportunity with new leadership to really examine, you know, the issue of consortium funding, particularly, you know, state did make it clear that, you know, the funding formula that was used and the allocations were based on, you know, some questionable data in the past. It's not a ding on anyone here presently, but we know there was that finding. So all I'm saying is I just think this conversation needs to happen, and I think, you know, it should happen in an open, you know, transparent fashion. So that's it. Thanks.
Thanks. Ms. Chakas.
Yes. Well, actually, back in August 29th, was called to present to the Board of Education at a non-scheduled meeting. And one of the items was that they wanted us to address the FITMAP report. This was something that there's also new administration in the HR classified and certificated departments, and we just basically said what the systems that we have in place and what we have been moving forward on. A lot of the discrepancies is up to interpretation, and as far as our, what we represent here is that we are complacent, but not, I'm sorry, transparent, and that we are moving forward with all our staff, starting with certificated, classified. We had back to school night, and we basically just said, really read the FITMAP reports, read the state audit. We were informed by the our council at the district level to really read the reports, and we did, and we made changes immediately. We strengthened and also informed our support staff as well as our teachers, because there's a lot of teachers that are just basically doing what they love to do, is teaching our adult learners. That's all their intent was. So now they're saying, okay, we need to be a little bit more educated on what's happening. But it was never to disillusion the teachers, nor the adult learners, nor the LARIC consortium. We actually also put in put in systems into place where it came to the cash handling, into the time reporting, into everything that addressed both the FITMAP report as well as the state audit. So we are addressing it each and every day. We meet weekly with teachers. The administrative staff is all on deck. We have the program specialist along with myself, Mr. Tenorio, and I. And we have been having meetings continuously. One of the items that we were, my charge a year, 2 months ago, was just to develop the CTE classes and to build a relationship piece, and I think it's moved forward. Previous administration that was on this board, Mr. Dan Garcia, that was his vision as well. In regards to past, I can't look in the past, but we are pretty much restructuring and making it happen, trying to make make a difference. We are focusing on our personal care aid classes, our CTE classes, pharmacy tech. Everything started pretty much in after January. Pharmacy tech started in February. Personal care aid started last October. The Adults with Disabilities program started in October of 2017. We've made strides. We've built the CIE blueprint with the Department of Rehab, East Los Angeles Regional Center, EED program. The certificated nursing, certified nursing program finally got opened up September 5th, so we're very happy with that. And all our computer labs are equipped with all the computer programmings and everything that was listed on that report as far as the FitMet or the state audit. It's all been purchased and implemented. We have a digital literacy learning upgrade, and recently we opened up two more sites for GradPoint for our high school labs. All of our Rosetta Stone labs are in place. We have 500 licenses, and it's been very, very successful with our ESL programs. As far as the PLT meetings, we already had the first one, and we have three more scheduled for this fall and two for the spring. So, again, moving forward, teachable moments, Friday coffee talk, we've put those systems into place, and the teacher, it's not only because the adult learners deserve it, the teachers expect it, and so does the administration, and that's what we're focusing on, just moving forward and being transparent.
Great, thank you. Culver City, just, I wanted to say something just about, in the summer we did, we piloted Burlington with reading for ESL. And we are going to continue with that moving into this school year. It took us a while to kind of jump on that Burlington bandwagon because we weren't really sure how that was going to work. But the teachers and the students found value. So we'll be continuing that with some of our classes, not with all of them. And then we implemented, after a six-month training of EBRI, that I attended with our ABE coordinator, implemented EBRI in our ABE program, and really committed to improving the literacy of our students, right? Not as a ESL 5 or 6, but really improving the literacy of our English-speaking students that also need it. So something that we're working on while my ABE coordinator is off on family bonding leave. So I have been writing lesson plans, just so you know. It's been a lot of fun. All right, next item, consent agenda. Is there any request? I got to even see the agenda. Sorry. Is there any consent agenda item that needs to be moved to regular discussion? So there's LAUSD capital outlay, approved firm for consulting, and approved firm for auditing. Those are items 7.1. Right? 7.2 and 7.3. I'm following. Over the place.
Madam Chair, I would like to move that we approve 7.1, 7.2, and 7.3 under consent item agenda.
Second.
Hearing no objections, the items on the consent agenda have been adopted.
No, they have to be voted on.
Oh.
Well, you have to ask for discussion first if anybody wants to discuss.
Does anybody, thank goodness for Bob, does anybody want to discuss any of the items? Can I have a vote and we'll do it by
roll call?
Roll call vote for all items, Bob, or one at a time?
You can do all.
Okay. Mr. Urioste.
Aye.
Dr. Miller.
Aye.
Mr. Stark. Ms. Jockus.
Aye.
Me. Aye. Consent item is approved. We have no announcements. Our next meeting will be on October 19th at Burbank Adult School. I'm going early for the Chinese food just
I'll make sure we have that, Madam Chair.
So this meeting is adjourned at 3:33 on September 21st. Our next open meeting, immediately following this one, will be where, Lancey? Are we moving or are we going to do it here?
No, it's going to be in room 305, and that is a workshop. A board workshop.
Board workshop.
So we're not going to reach.
I think
so. Okay.
Were you talking about today or
yes,
the next meeting?
Today.
So do we, I don't know if we need to reconvene as a board, because it's not a closed session, we're just
no,
having a workshop.
That is correct.
Yeah, so we
don't
need to adjourn today's meeting. And then we're going to go into room 305 to have our workshop.
And they're all going to go if they want.
Oh.
Because it's an open meeting. Yeah.
It's an open meeting. Mm-hmm. It'll be,
okay.
So I think I adjourned this meeting, right, at 3:33, and we will reconvene in room 305.
Okay.
For a discussion about workshop topics and workshop meeting dates that's also open to the public. 3:05. We'll see you there.
All right. Thank you. Good job.
Oh, my gosh. No, I still can't. It's too complicated, Bob. I don't care what you're saying. It's way too complicated to do this stuff.
People like Joe and I have been coming to too many board meetings for
it's so funny. For the 6 years that I've been at Culver City, I'm not every board meeting. But being there sitting in the audience, I'm not paying as close attention, apparently, as to the directions for things.
Yeah, you should come see Monica Garcia. Does a pretty darn good
job. Oh, no, I know.
She moves it right along.
Right? I'm afraid. She scares me. I think I have another. Are we getting another packet there? Oh, did I pick one up? I got to see if I. But I have a separate one. Elvis, can you get me an agenda? Can you give me the other agenda item? The workshop agenda one? I didn't grab that. I don't know. Ask. Oh, I'm sorry. Emo, I'm moving.
No. I'm calling you guys to the next meeting.
Oh, okay. So then you can't go anywhere until.
So I gotta.
It was there?
Yeah.
It's like a one page thing.
Yeah. But why is there so many pages? Oh, you want me to take all of them?
I'll take them if you want. Okay.
Oh, ask Michelle what
Michelle
I did.
Gave it to you.
Oh, she did. Okay, so she wants me to take them down. And then, shoot. Michelle, where did I put my. Oh, here's the special thing. So, I would. I
think I'm going to
call it. I would like to come and take a
briefly.
Yeah, that thing. I would love to come out and see you guys and meet with you and sit with you guys.
Okay, good.
So,
I'm happy to
instead of confined,
they're
hungry. I can kind of grab them. Whatever. Okay. Perfect. So I'll get your information.
All right.
So
thank you.
All
good job.
And what are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
¿Cómo están las vacas?
It was fun just to get a feeler. You look good. You look
great. I'm trying.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'm going to start again. I keep on starting and stopping.
You know what? Yes,
it is. I think there's a lot of stuff that is happening.